My audiobooks.ai presents Operation Sea Spray, San Francisco's secret naval bacteria test. In late September 1950, a United States Navy vessel moved through the coastal waters just outside the Golden Gate, releasing dense plumes of living bacteria into the ocean breeze. Over the course of 6 days, coastal fog and onshore winds carried that aerosol directly into the streets of San Francisco, exposing roughly 800,000 residents without warning or consent. Weeks later, clinicians at Stanford University Hospital recorded an unprecedented outbreak of infections caused by the exact bacterial species the military had sprayed, and one patient died. The military maintained that its test organisms were harmless to human health, a defensible stand-in meant to reveal how a biological attack might unfold across an American metropolis. Decades later, that naval exercise remains a defining study in the limits of military secrecy, medical attribution, and the meaning of the word harmless. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library.
At the onset of the 1950s, American defense planners regarded biological warfare as an urgent, realistic threat. Soviet capabilities were expanding rapidly, and military strategists worried that an adversary could covertly release lethal pathogens along the coastline of a major domestic port.
To prepare defenses, planners needed to understand how biological aerosols behaved in real terrain. An aerosol is a suspension of microscopic particles or liquid droplets dispersed in the air. Measuring how far those clouds travel across hills, skyscrapers, and residential neighborhoods required empirical data that laboratory wind tunnels could never produce. Atmospheric turbulence, humidity, and microclimates alter the drift of microscopic particles in ways that mathematical models of the era could not predict. Testing actual pathogens over an inhabited city was unthinkable. Military researchers solved that problem by selecting biological simulants. These were supposedly benign organisms, intended to mimic the dispersal and physical persistence of dangerous bioweapons without causing disease.
For the operation, defense researchers selected two specific bacterial species, Serratia marcescens and Bacillus globigii, an organism later reclassified as Bacillus atrophaeus. Bacillus globigii produced durable spores, making it an ideal surrogate for spore-forming agents such as anthrax. Serratia marcescens offered a distinct operational advantage. When grown on laboratory agar, its colonies produced a striking deep red pigment. This bright coloration allowed military technicians to identify and count collected samples quickly against background environmental microbes without complex chemical analysis.
San Francisco was an ideal natural testing ground. It was a primary Pacific logistics hub with a dense urban core surrounded on three sides by water that channeled predictable onshore breezes and heavy marine fog. If an aerosol cloud could penetrate the neighborhoods of San Francisco, planners reasoned, the resulting data would reveal the vulnerability of every coastal port in the United States. The justification for conducting the test over a populated area rested on a single medical premise. Both organisms were officially categorized as non-pathogenic, meaning incapable of producing disease in healthy human beings. Because the bacteria were presumed harmless, defense officials decided that informing the public or seeking consent was unnecessary.
Secrecy was built directly into the experimental design. Planners wanted to test civilian vulnerability under conditions of total surprise, assuming that what healthy adults did not know would not hurt them. That assumption created an unresolved friction between a laboratory definition of safety and the diverse, fragile population of a living city. The operation, designated Operation Sea Spray, began on September 20, 1950. Just outside San Francisco Bay, a Navy vessel, identified in official summaries as a minesweeper, navigated an offshore track roughly 2 miles off the coastline.
Mounted aboard the ship was an array of specialized spray equipment designed to atomize millions of liters of bacterial slurry into a fine aerosol mist.
Between September 20th and September 27th, the ship conducted six distinct releases. As the spray nozzles discharged the liquid into the maritime air, prevailing onshore winds seized the aerosol plumes. The bacterial clouds lifted into the incoming marine layer and drifted directly across the shoreline. To track the movement of the bacteria, military personnel established 43 monitoring stations throughout the metropolitan area. Technicians placed air samplers, filters, and culture plates on rooftops, along utility poles, and inside public parks across the San Francisco Peninsula, extending into the East Bay.
The sampling arrays confirmed the planners' expectations. The thick coastal fog shielded the bacteria from the sterilizing effects of direct solar radiation, while coastal wind currents funneled the aerosol deep into urban neighborhoods. The cloud traveled inland across city streets, parks, and homes, crossing the bay into neighboring communities. Military calculations later indicated that the aerosol covered nearly the entire city. The sampling data suggested that nearly every person living within the target zone inhaled thousands of bacterial particles over the course of the week.
The stated military purpose of the exercise was defensive. The data allowed researchers to quantify urban vulnerability, calibrate mathematical dispersion models, and determine whether a hostile offshore vessel could silently contaminate a population center. Operation Sea Spray demonstrated that an unannounced maritime biological release could blanket an entire metropolis with remarkable efficiency. Yet, while the Navy documented the distribution of its red pigmented simulant, an unexpected clinical pattern began developing in a hospital ward just miles from the coastline.
In October 1950, clinicians at Stanford University Hospital, then located in San Francisco, began observing a strange microorganism in cultures taken from hospitalized patients. 11 individuals, all receiving inpatient care for unrelated medical conditions, developed serious infections caused by Serratia marcescens. To the medical team, the finding was extraordinary. In the hospital's prior clinical experience, Serratia marcescens had almost never been isolated from human disease. Medical textbooks of the era described the red pigmented bacterium as a harmless saprophyte, an environmental organism that lived in soil, water, and decaying vegetation without threatening human tissue. The sudden appearance of 11 cases in a concentrated time frame departed completely from clinical baseline.
The clinicians, led by infectious disease specialist Dr. Lewis Rance, documented the anomalous cluster in a paper published in 1951 in the Archives of Internal Medicine. The report tracked how the bacteria had established infections primarily within the urinary tracts of patients who had undergone instrumentation, such as catheterization or surgery. Among those infected was Edward J. Nevin, a retired postal worker who had entered Stanford University Hospital for surgical treatment of an enlarged prostate. Following his procedure, Nevin developed a high fever, chills, and signs of systemic infection.
Laboratory analysis confirmed that Serratia marcescens had entered his bloodstream. The bacterium colonized his heart valves, producing bacterial endocarditis. Despite medical treatments and antibiotic interventions, the infection progressed, and Edward Nevin died on November 1st. 1950. Dr. Rance and his colleagues cataloged the cluster with clinical rigor. They debated whether a new environmental reservoir or an internal hospital contamination had introduced the organism to their wards. What the attending physicians did not know and could not have guessed was that 3 weeks before their first positive culture, a naval vessel had released clouds of that exact bacterium directly over the city.
The close timing between the Navy's release and the Stanford Hospital cluster presented a striking circumstantial case.
Yet, establishing a causal connection in clinical epidemiology requires more than proximity in time and place. Decades of subsequent inquiry have revealed substantial scientific ambiguities that keep the medical attribution unresolved. First, mid-century medicine lacked the molecular tools required to trace bacterial strains conclusively. Modern epidemiology relies on genomic sequencing to match clinical isolates with environmental sources. In 1950, researchers could identify the genus and species of an organism, but they could not map its specific genetic fingerprint.
The physical hospital isolates from 1950 were discarded after analysis. As a result, scientists could never test the bacteria recovered from Edward Nevin against the Navy's original stock cultures to determine if they were genetically identical. Second, the route of transmission into the hospital remains unproven. For an airborne simulant to cause a urinary tract infection, it would have to enter the hospital ventilation system, settle onto surfaces or medical solutions, and then be introduced directly into a patient during an invasive procedure. Mid-century hospitals regularly utilized open irrigation solutions, non-disposable rubber catheters, and manual sterilization procedures that were vulnerable to local contamination.
It remains possible that the Navy's aerosol drifted through open windows and seeded hospital equipment. It is equally possible that the hospital had developed an independent, internal reservoir of Serratia marcescens, entirely unrelated to the offshore release. Beyond the Stanford cluster, secondary accounts later suggested a regional rise in pneumonia and respiratory complaints across San Francisco following the exercise. Yet public health monitoring in 1950 was not designed to capture diffuse subclinical exposures across an entire civilian population. Without baseline surveillance or control groups, researchers could not determine whether fluctuating respiratory diagnoses represented seasonal viral trends, reporting anomalies, or a direct reaction to the inhaled bacteria.
What the evidence did rewrite, however, was the biological definition of harmlessness. Modern clinical microbiology categorizes Serratia marcescens as an opportunistic pathogen. To a healthy adult with an intact immune system, brief exposure to Serratia is usually cleared without symptoms. In a hospitalized individual with open surgical wounds, indwelling catheters, or compromised immunity, the organism behaves very differently. Under those conditions, Serratia can cause severe, life-threatening, systemic disease.
The classification of the simulant as universally safe overlooked the reality of a living urban population. A metropolitan city is not an army barracks populated exclusively by healthy young recruits. It contains infants, elderly residents, and hospitalized patients recovering from major surgery. The secrecy surrounding the test made an immediate public health investigation impossible. By keeping the exercise classified, defense officials ensured that the environmental and clinical data necessary to confirm or refute harm could never be gathered when the evidence was fresh.
The wall of military secrecy held for more than two decades. The public, the residents of San Francisco, and the physicians who investigated the Stanford cluster remained unaware of Operation Seaspray until the mid-1970s, when investigative reporting and Freedom of Information Act requests forced classified records into the open. In 1977, the United States Senate held formal oversight hearings before the Subcommittee on Health and Scientific Research, chaired by Senator Edward Kennedy. Titled Biological Testing Involving Human Subjects by the Department of Defense, the proceedings convened on March 8th and May 23rd, bringing senior defense officials and scientific witnesses before Congress.
The declassified testimony revealed that Operation Seaspray was not an isolated experiment. Between 1949 and 1969, the military had conducted roughly 239 open-air biological tests across the country. Simulants had been dropped into the New York City subway system, sprayed from vehicles into highway traffic,
dispersed at Washington National Airport and released across large military ranges, including Dugway Proving Ground in Utah.
The hearings placed intense scrutiny on the institutional assumptions governing those operations. Defense officials testified that researchers had selected organisms universally regarded by the scientific consensus of the era as non-pathogenic. Yet independent medical experts countered that even in the 1950s, scientific literature had documented rare instances of opportunistic infection from so-called benign microbes. By using an entire metropolitan population as an unmonitored test group, military planners had gambled on an absolute safety margin that clinical reality did not support.
The congressional disclosures prompted legal action. In 1981, the family of Edward J. Nevin brought suit against the federal government, seeking accountability for his death 3 decades earlier. The federal court acknowledged that the Navy had released the bacteria and that Nevin had died of a Serratia infection. However, the presiding judge ruled in favor of the government. The court held that the plaintiffs could not legally prove that the specific bacteria that infected Nevin originated from the naval vessel offshore rather than from an internal hospital source.
The legal ruling underscored the ultimate paradox of the operation. The government's decision to conduct the test in total secrecy destroyed the very chain of custody that could have proven or disproven its responsibility. Decades of elapsed time, discarded medical records, and missing bacterial cultures made definitive legal attribution impossible to achieve. Operation Sea Spray leaves 2 distinct conclusions. On the question of medical causality, the historical record remains open. The infections at Stanford University Hospital cannot be conclusively tied to the Navy's offshore release, nor can they be definitively ruled out.
On the question of ethics and governance, however, the record is settled. Hundreds of thousands of citizens were deliberately exposed to biological agents without their knowledge, based on an institutional assurance of safety that failed to account for the most vulnerable among them. The lasting legacy of the test centers on who holds the authority to define an exposure as safe, what scientific standards the word harmless demands, and the inherent danger of trading public transparency for military readiness.
As you reflect on the history of Operation Sea Spray, consider what standards an open society must place on military research, and who should have the right to declare a risk acceptable. If you appreciate deep, evidence-led historical investigations, there are many more accounts of science, defense, and public accountability to explore. Thanks for watching. To create your own audiobooks from your prompts and documents, visit myaudiobooks.ai. Subscribe for more.